Technorama, episode 343 for June 6th. The geothermal altitude is inversely proportional to the gravitational well that is created by atmospheric pressure. Or, we're high on midichlorians!
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
A priest, a rabbi, and a lawyer were looking for a place to tell a joke.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for June 6, 2012. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm exhausted.
Why is that?
I've been assembling a grill.
You've been assimilating a grill?
Yeah.
Are you the Borg master? The Borg chef?
The Borg, yeah. Resistance is futile. Grill my meat.
Grills are not that difficult to assimilate.
Yeah.
I mean, assemble?
I made the jump from charcoal to light speed.
There's microwaves now, too, but they don't taste the same.
Maybe I should go put a microwave on the little...
This is Mark Shepard.
Hey, Mark. I'll say maybe I should take my microwave outside and just kind of nuke my food outside. It's kind of the same thing, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't do justice to the steaks.
Why are these steaks rubbery? I thought you put them on the grill. Nope.
All right, coming up in this episode, we have, is George Lucas doing another edit on Star Wars? When the next transit of Venus is, and the best way to send your money to Nigeria.
Yay.
All that and more coming up right after this.
Deep in the inky blackness of space, the crew of the salvage ship JN30518 have a problem. Their main jump engine has gone out, and now they are forced to crash land on a planet that was colonized, but then lost. Trapped on a planet that has lost its technology and slipped back into the Dark Ages, the crew finds a new way to survive. They hire out their advanced technology to governments and religions who will pay dearly to make their prophecies come true. Want your leader to address the people from atop a pillar of fire? We can do that. Does your priest need something that will make his voice tremble mountains? We have a sale on those this week. But like all good cons, this one has its little problems. As the crew find themselves kidnapping a deified prince, escaping the wrath of two nations' armies, they have to fight to stay alive. And even if they can get away, can they ever escape the grip of a true prophecy? The new book by Brand Gamblin offers up comedy, romance, and a lot of adventure. Come check out Discount Miracles, available on Smashwords and Amazon.
Hey, we do this show live each week as a evidence of the editing we do.
Yeah.
Or not. And each week we have a live chat room and do this show live on Google Plus. We're going to start using the on-air capability. You can watch it later on the website. We're going to bring back the videos on the website. And if you happen to be around on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time or whatever part of the world you're in, whatever that equates to, look it up on some website time calculator thingy. You can catch us there. If you happen to be around, follow us on Twitter, we'll let you know. Circle us on Google Plus, we'll be happy to tell you when the show is about to start and catch an invite. Or just head over to the website, chuckchat.com, on Wednesday night. This week, the chat room is a little sparse, but we have Sea Magic Fridge, Chatbot Craig, Captain Rootbeer, Dandy Man, Gru IRC Tim, Marvybot, and ZML2008 all joining us this week in the chat room. Yes, we've gone back to the old chat room so we can have the fancy names and whatnot.
Yeah, so when you want to watch us live, what do, Chuck? Where do you go?
You go to... Where is it? No, that's the listener line.
Oh, yeah.
I thought my sister had it, but she just had this.
Send your comments to technorama at chuckchat.com.
Gonna have to hire her for a website stinger.
Yeah.
chuckchat.com/technorama, and you can find the links and everything there. The webcam, what is it, webcam/chat or something? There's a link there. Otherwise, it's just live and present on the screen while we're doing this.
Yeah.
As long as you remember to hit play.
Yeah, just be sure to hit play.
Turning to the listener birthday calendar, we have June 6th has a couple of birthdays. Adam Larson, a.k.a. Uncle Adam, or Grandma Grace, born in 1921. Wow, is she still with us? That's awesome. I wonder whose grandma that is.
She listens every day.
One of our listeners. That would probably be one of our most oldestest listeners around.
Oldest list?
Was that an octogenarian? No, she's now a... What's a 90-year-old person? Nanogenarian? Whatever.
Up there, I think we call them up there.
June 8th, Bobby Irvin. And June 10th, a couple of more birthdays. Tim from Australia and Weber. By the way, June 10th, AA was founded. Oh, Alcoholics Anonymous in 1935. So somebody's got us a on this day in history in the birthday calendar, even though it's not on the 10th. But hey, thank you very much to everybody whose birthday it is this week. We want to wish you a happy birthday. And if it's your birthday and you're not on the birthday calendar, you can rectify that situation. Rectify, darn near killed him. Go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. And go to the chat room. I mean, go to the wiki, put your birthday in there. We'll call you out at the right part of the year. Distracted myself.
You can do it all in the chat room all you want.
Happy birthday to me.
It's my birthday.
And like I said, join us on Google Plus every Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern time. We'd love to see you there. We have a little bit of feedback. I need my feedback music on the soundboard now. I got to redo the soundboard so it's like the old laptop. We have an email from Michelle. Actually, I think this was a Twitter, wasn't it? No, it was an email.
Yeah, listening, it was on Twitter.
Listening to the guys from at Technorama explain how Chris Hemsworth must have done P90X for demigods to get his build. Hilarious. Speaking of Chris, we'll talk about Snow White and Huntsman a little later. We also have a voicemail from Mark.
Okay.
Here comes the mail.
Hey, guys. It's Mark in Memphis. I'm sorry. TARDIS Cat House just sounds like a sci-fi thing about a brothel to me. Bye.
I'm there, dude.
Wow. Oh, boy.
TARDIS Cat House.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like a TARDIS cat fight?
Well, no. Not the way Mark explains it.
Thank you, Mark. We'll never listen to that same way again. If we find any cat-related items, because the internet is for cats, after all.
And bacon.
And bacon. And porn.
Well, you know.
But he just put those two together, cats and porn, so.
Yeah.
It works out well.
Sure.
Okay. On this day in history for June 6, 2012. It was on this date in 1683 that the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, England, opens as the world's first university museum.
And also today in 1822, Alexis St. Martin was accidentally shot in the stomach.
Ow.
Which leads way to William Beaumont's studies on digestion.
I think Alexis was the dude with the little flap that he could open and watch things inside.
Oh, really?
U.S. President Andrew Jackson becomes the first president to ride on a train today in 1833.
And also, speaking of trains, on June 6, 1892, Chicago L begins its operation.
Teenagers rejoice today in 1933 as the first drive-in theater opens in Camden, New Jersey.
Yay, make out, yay!
Banger chicka wow wow.
Under a temporary order, the rocket launches at Cuxhaven, Germany, are terminated, though they never resume on this date in 1964.
Also today, 1971, Soyuz 11 launches.
And Tetris, one of the best-selling video games of all time, is released in 1984.
Could human resistant music. Had it right there. And just 10 years ago today, a near-Earth asteroid estimated at 10 meters in diameter explodes over the Mediterranean Sea between Greece and Libya. The resulting explosion is estimated to have force of 26 kilotons, slightly more powerful than the Nagasaki atomic bomb.
That's amazing.
Happy birthday goes out of this date to German mathematician Regiomontanus, born today in 1436.
And in 1580, Godfrey Wittlin, Finnish astronomer, was born today.
German physicist and Nobel laureate Carl Ferdinand Braun was born today in 1850.
And in 1857,
Alexander
Lyapunov.
Lyapunov.
Okay, in 1857,
Alexander.
Oh, Alexander. In 1857, Alexander Lyapunov, Russian mathematician, was born and started adding today.
English explorer Sir Robert Falcon Scott was born on this date in 1868. That rhymes.
Yeah. And in 1906, Max August Zorn, German-born mathematician, also started adding to his tally today.
You get all the mathematicians, I guess. American astronaut David Scott turns 80 today.
And Swiss Swiss physicist. Wow. And Nobel laureate Heinrich Röhr celebrates his 79th birthday.
American scientist and Nobel laureate Philip Allen Sharp turned 68.
And finally, Freddy Krueger, actor Robert Englund, turned 65. Wow.
And that's the way it was, like it or not, on this day in history for June 6, 2012.
Take it or leave it, like it or not.
Good news, anyone?
Hey, we just want to let you know that, you know, every year it seems like you have to revise at least the history books, right? Because there's more history to add than there was the previous year.
We're obviously rewriting it and are on this day in history.
Well, now they have to revise the science books because, hey, you know, Pluto is no longer a planet. But now students have to remember two more elements. They have to know Flerovium and Livermorium.
They sound Livermorium. Made up.
No, Livermorium I could figure out came from Lawrence Livermore National Lab.
Okay. All right.
They were discovered by the Flerov Laboratory of Nuclear Reactions and the Joint Institute for Nuclear Research in Russia and the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory here in America.
Hmm.
Now Flerov and liver make sense. It's not just something you eat for dinner.
I was going to say Livermorium. I think that was what my mom tried to make me eat.
Devilwood under ham. No, Underwood deviled ham.
The first time I tasted liver, I put on a Livermorium.
A moratorium on Livermorium. Flerovium and Livermorium will be number 114 and 116, respectively, on the periodic table. Yay! Wow.
So do they wait and add, like, when they got, like, two or three major items to rewrite books?
No. Yeah, probably. I mean, how often do you come up with new elements after all?
Okay, we've got Pluto thing, and then we got the elements, and, you know, what do they wait for, threes to update the books?
No, because Pluto was, like, 5 years ago or so.
I know. Well, I'm just saying, you know.
Darn you, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Hey, I bet there's plenty of Flavorium and Livermorium on Pluto.
Plutonium.
Plutonium on Plutonium.
Show has lots of psyllium.
Yeah.
Hey, I was, just before the show, I was uploading some pictures at, got a new Nikon D90, which I'll talk about a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Because that leads into a whole other soap opera that I've been dealing with, and I hope to make people a little smarter by listening to this podcast, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
But as I was uploading those, I stuck the SD card in the handy-dandy little SD to USB reader, popped it in the back of the iMac, and Dropbox jumps up and intercepts the message and says, hey, would you like more storage? Put your photos directly on Dropbox.
Click deny.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's wrong for me.
No. I didn't earn this.
Who doesn't want more Dropbox storage?
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool. Now, it said you could get up to 3 gigabytes additional storage. But I was already at like 9 point something, and it got me to 10 point something. So I got another gigabyte, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you want to try and get yet a little more storage and all your friends have already been invited and you got all the referrals that you can get out of them, try uploading some pictures directly to Dropbox and see what happens. It was actually like a little interceptor program because you got that little Dropbox gadget that's running in the background to sync stuff.
Yeah.
And well, that came up and told me.
Well, they did a whole thing with the mobile. You know, if you enabled auto uploads, like from my phone, as soon as I took a picture, it would want to start uploading the picture, which was cool. But I already used that in Google Plus, so I was like, I don't need it in two places. But it was neat. And when you allowed it to do the auto uploads, it was giving you some space automatically, just like you experienced, so you could store all those pictures, which. That's why I had it on for a little bit, just to get some space, which was cool.
And you know why they're doing this, right?
I don't know why.
Because Google Drive just came out.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Google Drive
like
sounds
Dropbox.
More like a better name for a GPS.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I like Google Drive to a degree. I've used it a couple times. But I like Dropbox, I think, a little bit better for the moment because... I haven't had any syncing issues yet. The other day, Google Drive was complaining about syncing. One, you know, it was. I had to click on the menu and it said there was a file that couldn't sync. Retry. I was like, yeah, retry. I don't want to have to think about that. You know, I want it just to sync. And Dropbox does that really well.
If you're looking for more information about these syncing services, including Google Drive, go listen to one of the recent episodes of Tech Stuff, How Stuff Works. Jonathan Strickland and Chris Paulette do a really good job of explaining it. I mean, they start at the basic level, so even if you don't know a whole lot about these things, mm-hmm. they get into that. They do a comparison about SugarSync and Microsoft SkyDrive and Google and all the major players that are in there, and a cost comparative analysis of who's got what. Now, this is time-sensitive information, but hey, go listen to it and read up more about that. I just thought it was
fun. If you hurry up, it won't be too sensitive.
It won't be, it won't be too outdated. But if you wait 6 or 7 years, things are going to change.
Yeah.
Hacks and strange stories. Craig has come up with something interesting. I know you're an old C64 fanboy.
Wait, it was actually NCAF.
NCAF came up with this one.
Yeah.
This is from the Geekosystem website, but I've also seen this, I believe, on Make. Because this was at Maker Faire, was it? Or Make Live was at?
I believe.
Where were they?
I'm actually looking at the right now. I think it was at Make Live.
But the creator of this is Jerry Ellsworth, who is better known for that Millennium Falcon guitar or bass
that
she'd made. I think we all saw that a few months ago. Yep. Now she's...
The Rebel Bass?
Now she's melded another bass onto a Commodore 64 and made a C64 keytar. Yeehaw. And it looks cool, and it sounds kind of garbagey, but I'm sure someone will be able to make music out of it.
Sure. Well, she's, you know, what's sad about this picture is she's kind of attractive, and she's got a Commodore strapped around her neck, and then on top of that, she's got a bass. It's the bass.
So she's really nerdy. I mean, she was talking about, you know, putting an FPGA in this thing, which means she knows enough to program and get
I'm
FPGAs.
I'm impressed, and I don't know what an FPGA is.
Field Programmable Gate Array.
Oh, yeah. Well,
not
I do know what
that is. Gatorade.
Gatorade. Gatorade.
It's different than an ASIC.
No, that's cool, though.
That is cool.
So she actually made this thing?
She made this thing. It's got most of the, she said all the sounds. It's got the piezo pickups on the strings, like a normal bass would do. And then she runs that through the Commodore 64. The FPGA picks up and does a sound sampling to figure out what the sequences are. And then the keys on the C64 are for different tones, but the function keys are your different tone generators. So you can change. You know, you strum the string, it'll go, you change it again, it'll go, boom. So you can, it's really kind of a cool little device.
Impressive. Most impressive.
I see your bass making skills are complete.
Yeah. I see your base making skills, and I up you the ante with the Commodore 64 one.
That sounds like an Iron Chef thing for geeks. Here's a bass and a Commodore 64. What can you make out of this?
Here's a broken guitar, a Commodore 64, and a digital watch.
Mike Wills sends us a similar link to YouTube where this gentleman has made not only just an Iron Man Mark VII costume, you know, the red and gold one, but this thing's got some articulation on it. And I'd be curious to know how it actually works, because in the video, the guy says, hey, show me what your costume does. And without, you know, flinching a muscle, apparently, the mask closes. And then it turns around, and then, like, the little jetpack wings come out and close. Yeah. And this is awesome. I mean, this guy went the extra mile on this costume.
Yeah, and, you know, if you go search around, well, actually, off on the side, sidebar on YouTube, you start looking at some of the other costumes. There are a lot of other Iron Man costumes, and some of them are really good. Some of them are borderline cardboard, you know.
Yeah.
But there's some that are really good, very impressive. And this guy, if you go search around for, what's his name? I think it's Lee, Master Lee, and that's L-E. You'll find more videos by him. I'm sorry. If you click on the video right above his name, I'm sorry, it's Anthony Lee, and you click on his YouTube channel. He's got other videos of the costume. Very cool.
All right. From the cool to the stupid.
How's that for a segue?
We go to, yeah, that's Technorama right there. Just right, that's it. Excuse me. We have a picture of a gentleman being scrubbed by apparently his mother with a toilet brush on his hand. And this guy is all green. He's trying to do some cosplay as the Hulk, apparently, but instead of getting regular body paint, he got his hands on what apparently was used for ballistic missiles and submarines. However you get your hands on that stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, here's his picture right here. Look at that guy.
According to the Brazilian news site ExtraGlobo.com, Paulo had hoped to buy a brand of paint he'd used on a previous outing as the Hulk, but the shop he went to didn't have it.
Aww.
As if bright green was embarrassing enough, the local press ran pictures of his mother trying to remove the paint and referred to her as his girlfriend.
Hey, how embarrassed could she be? She let the local press into the bathroom.
And used her good toilet brush.
Yeah.
Poor Paulo. He kind of looks like my nephew. It's not good.
Yeah, that but he used that military dye that they used on... You know, it's funny. It's like the store didn't have the dye he used, but, oh, we got this military grade.
We have special paint for you.
Yeah, wash it off. Oh, yeah, no problem.
How long do you want to be the Hulk? You are going to do this again next year, right?
Hey, he looks pretty docile. I'm not sure he's so angry.
I'd come back and smash the place up.
He's more like the embarrassed Hulk.
Never saw the Hulk turn red before.
Hey, there was this picture floating around. I know probably everybody's seen it by now, but it said the credible Hulk, and he's like tipping his glasses down. You know, he had like a pencil and paper and, you know, dipping his glasses in. The credible Hulk.
Turning to the Remember When segment. Who had sent us this picture? Was this a Kyle thing? A Mad Marv? It said, remember this unique relationship.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a picture of a cassette tape and a pencil. Now, if you don't know what this is for, you're not old enough.
Yes.
What was the relationship between, Craig, just, okay, help us out. What was the relationship between a pencil and a cassette tape?
Are you talking about the naughty version? I'm just kidding.
The kind we can hear on Technorama.
You use it to rewind your tapes. You could,
right.
If you had the right size pencil, you could almost go and kind of spin it around.
A normal pencil, like a number 2 Dixon Ticonderoga, was just a little small, and it had a little bit of wobble, but you could still get the job done. Yeah. So you put the pencil through one of those sprocket holes, and you spun it around like a New Year's Eve toy. And that's how you would rewind your tape.
Yeah.
And actually, it was probably better that it didn't, like, get a full connection in there, because when you got to the end, it probably would have snapped it off the way that, well, I spun those babies around.
Also, hey, you know, technically, if you do it with a pencil like that and you don't have some tension on the other roller, you're going to get too loose of a wind on the...
Only if you, you stop and you get backlash, like a fly fishing reel.
Yeah. You know, hey, by the way, the other day, speaking of cassette tapes, I thought it was funny. I was walking down the road, like running. You know, I've been running, especially this last week.
Mm-hmm.
Went running, and there was a cassette tape somebody had thrown out the window of a car.
Oh, it was yesterday. Like, you know, I got one even
like,
better.
It was like a, you know, the mesh of the tape where they had pulled it out of the tape deck. I'm like, when was the last time I had seen that?
You mean the rat's nest of tape?
Yeah, you know how it would get stuck in your car and people would throw them out the window?
That's really, you know, sad.
You used to see them a lot back in the day, right?
Yeah, and the tape would be like going down for a quarter mile along the roadside.
That's right. Well, I happened to see it and I was like, I wish I could have taken a picture of it with my camera, but...
It's having throwbacks. I was at Cheese Fest in Little Chute, Wisconsin yesterday. Imagine that, Cheese Fest in Wisconsin, right? And there's carnival rides and a band playing old songs and everything. It was a good time. Well, we walked past one of these booths on the Midway, and it was called Break the Record. And they literally took a 12-inch LP, hung it from a couple of strings, and let people throw baseballs at them. And you had to knock the LP completely off the strings to win a prize. So you get like six throws.
Were kids that put this up?
This was
obviously wasn't some adults that love vinyl.
I don't know, man. These were real records that they were smashing.
Hmm.
And I went, oh, that's sad. That's like, of course, you know, unless it's, you know, old Barry Manilow or something.
Hey, it's kind of like that same feeling when you watch America's Funniest Home Videos and the guy gets it in the crotch with a golf club or something.
That never fails to amuse.
No, I'm just saying, it's that same feeling with the vinyl. It's like, oh.
And, you know, the speed some of these people were throwing, they wouldn't hit the record dead center, because that's what you needed to really win your prize. But if they hit it, say, in the, you know, 2 o'clock position, for example, because these two strings were coming down from the sides, they would take a serious bite out of this album. I mean, they were brittle. You could see the shape of the baseball missing from the edge of the record.
I don't like this story.
It was sad. So your old cassette tape thing made me think of that.
Hmm.
Either that, or I'm going to set up a booth and make some money, because, you know, some people just couldn't hit the side of a barn, so your records are safe.
Oh, but by the way, speaking of all this breaking stuff, you know, after I saw the cassette tape, oddly enough, I saw a broken CD on the side of the road. I meant to mention that. So it was like, wow, nothing works.
This guy really has some technical challenges.
Stupid CD, I'm going to try a tape.
We're going to take a stupid A-track, stupid Victrola, stupid right. Wex cylinder.
Yeah.
Stupid live performers. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with the Media Corner right after this. Insert pause here.
You may not be aware, but every year, thousands upon thousands of Martian children go without podcasts.
Mars needs podcasts.
So this holiday season, no matter when in the year you happen to hear this promo, why don't you think about the Martians?
Mars needs podcasts.
Think about them by going to theweirdshow.com and subscribing.
Mars needs podcasts.
For your subscription, you'll receive a weekly, roughly one-hour podcast, all about Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, UFOs, odd science, incredible science, Martians.
Mars needs podcasts.
And for every subscription you make between now and some arbitrarily far future date, I'll make sure that a Martian also gets a subscription for free.
Mars needs podcasts.
That's right. As soon as we've been able to establish communication with the Martians, and as soon as they are able to actually subscribe to my show, I'll make sure to let them subscribe for free.
The Weird Show.
The Weird Show. The Weird Show.
The Weird Show.
Welcome back. First up in the media corner, we have Michael Dorn is pitching a Star Trek movie about, what do you think? What do you think?
Fight Club.
I Am Weasel.
I Am Weasel. A Fight Club remake.
he's pitching a movie about Worf. This is from GiantFreakingRobot.com. Love the site name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, we should do the... There. We haven't been doing that through the show, but we got to start sometime, right?
Yeah, right.
Somehow, Star Trek missed out on the direct-to-DVD craze. While other science fiction franchises like Babylon 5 and Farscape have used the medium as a way to extend their universe with fairly high quality, direct-to-DVD movies, somehow Star Trek missed that boat. Michael Dorn thinks it's time that change. By using DVDs or TV movies to tell stories about his Klingon character, Worf. Dorn, who played Worf in not one but two Star Trek TV series, says he's pitching a lower-budget Star Trek movie project. He thinks there's a place for direct-to-DVD, or as one shot on cable. He wants to write it himself. He has some writing experience already, you know. And here's how he describes...
Does he? Wait a minute. Whoa. He does?
Yeah.
Like writing what?
I don't know. Children's novels? Recipes? I don't know.
Fan fiction? That's what...
Here's how he describes what Worf would be doing in it. He is the captain of a ship, a Federation ship. He is out there in front of lines, basically chasing terrorists. Now, who could that be?
Chasing terrorists?
The Romulans? The Jem'Hadar?
Oh, no, no, no. The, well, you know, Deep Space Nine, it was the... Man.
The Jem'Hadar, or whoever they were standing up for? Yeah, but that storyline closed. Odo went back to his people, everybody lived happily ever after, and the, you know, the mercenaries were out of a job.
Well, it's Star Trek. They can go back and talk about anything they want.
And Wayun number 65 had to, you know, get put on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was way too much reference that my brain can stand at one point.
I think
we will have some of our Star Trek people in it, but mostly new characters. It will be interwoven into the fabric of Star Trek. And also, what we're going through right now. That wasn't a very good Michael Dorn impression, but...
No.
You get the general idea.
You'd have been closer if you were just talking like Chuck.
Gee, thanks.
You're welcome.
This isn't just a pipe dream. He's meeting with former Trek producer Rick Berman soon to be the idea by him. Then he's meeting with Sci-Fi Network to pitch the TV to them as a Trek movie. Ooh, this is sounding better all the time.
You know, they could probably go a little even lower budget and not print DVDs and just do digital media or something like that. Like Netflix or something. That'd be awesome.
Oh, iTunes.
Yeah.
His goal is to have this on the air next year if he can get anyone interested.
Good luck. I mean, it's already 6 months into the year.
Well, in the next year.
All right. Well,
it doesn't say this year, 2012.
Hey, you know, technically, if it was done well, I would go for that.
I'd like to see it. I'd like to see some more spin-offs of the Star Trek universe. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I liked Worf.
Yeah, those movies that show how many times he was denied.
Yeah, that was funny. I want to see him actually assert himself.
His way to get back.
Yeah. Assert yourself, Worf. Wait a minute. Well, I think he's got a failure already because he's talking with Rick Berman. What's Rick got to do with Star Trek now?
Talking with J.J. Abrams.
You said he was talking to Rick Berman.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were run out of Star Trek.
Were they?
Yeah. Enterprise didn't work very well.
Well, was Berman one of the writers on Enterprise?
Yeah. He was one of the producers.
Oh, okay. I knew he was on Deep Space Nine. I'd have to check my sources on that one. So, Craig, have you seen Men in Black 3?
Yes. Yes, I have.
I have not got... Julie's in my calendar has not lined up yet since that's been out.
Well, let me tell you.
Short, but no spoilers.
No, I won't give any spoilers because it's still a fresh movie. If you like the first one, I think you'd like the third one. I seen some mixed reviews, about half and half, I guess. But I have to say, I liked it a lot more than that. I liked it. We'll have to see it again. There were some cool little spots where, you know, of course, you know, it's a time travel type movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to see some of the tech that they had, you know, that they used, that, Jay and Kay have used before, and like a 60s version of it, like the Neuralizer. I mean, it's not really a spoiler or anything, but it's just funny to see the, you know, the different versions of
this. It's made
things
out of wood.
Yeah.
Steampunk.
Yeah, no. Balsa wood. No, but things like that. The storyline was good. I enjoyed it, although my local theater tried to screw us over.
What? What happened?
Well, the power flickered, or maybe the breaker flipped or whatever, that had all the cameras on it.
Yeah.
Or projector, excuse me. So it wasn't just our theater. It was all of them. So it took them about 15 minutes to get them all back and running. And so when they got it back and running, like I said, there was about 15-minute delay. So 10 minutes into the film, there's a 15-minute delay because we had to get the projectors back on.
Yeah.
Well, towards the end of the movie, I think that the lights and the little previews they play in between movies now, not the trailers and stuff, but just little previews. This first look, let's look at interview. That's, you know, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Those little interviews. Well, about 15 minutes before the movie was supposed to end, the lights come up, the audio goes down, the movie's still playing, but we hear those previews. And I'm like, what's going on? So I immediately run out of the concession stand because I knew it was automated, you know, so they needed to turn it off.
Some kind of timer, yeah.
So I ran out there and told the guy, well, all the theaters were like that. All right. Well, we just missed a scene. It's like they're talking to the military police. All of a sudden, next thing you know, they're in a whole different spot. And I'm like, what happened? So anyway, they did rewind the film. I don't think they quite rewound it fast enough, of course, but back enough. So we missed just a little bit, but we ended up seeing the rest of the movie. Despite that, I still enjoyed it. So I don't know if we'll have a fourth, but I enjoyed it.
But by that time, J and K will be a little old.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one that I've...
I got to mention this, and you probably heard this already, but Josh Brolin, he knocked it out of the park. There were times he did his job so well that I didn't think about him being K. I just accepted it was. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like a spectacle.
That's what it looked like on the trailers, too. It looked like he did such a good job playing a younger version of Tommy Lee Jones that it didn't interfere with the story.
Yeah. And when you finally go see it, and you can get back to me and let me know what you thought, but there's a scene where Josh Brolin's trying to, I don't want to tell you what's happening, but he's doing something, and he makes this grimace on his face because he's trying to overcome this thing. And for a moment, I thought, if that's not Tommy Lee Jones, I don't know what is. Because, I mean, swear, it had me fooled.
He had to probably study the mannerisms really closely.
He made one of those faces like he was trying to, you know, do something. And not constipation, but that kind of face. Anyway, I was like, wow, he nailed it. Very good. I'd love to see him do some more.
The other one that I want to see is Snow White and the Huntsman. I've heard mixed reviews on that.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard the story is a little thin. The female actresses are a little light. It's like watching the Twilight actress again play the same character in a different movie.
Right.
But Chris Hemsworth did an awesome job, and the CG and special effects were good enough that it basically carried the movie.
Hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see that.
Well, I think Chris Hemsworth has a long career ahead of him because he's been good. He brought Thor to life very well.
Well, when it comes to action movies, yeah, he's got that nailed.
I love just seeing his little bit he did in Star Trek. I was like, wow, you know, and then finally
that's an action
found out
movie. That's an action movie. It was an action sequence.
Yeah. Oh, you want to see him in something else? Like a love kind of chick flick? Kind of.
as long as it's not, you know, a Rob Schneider or what's his name movie?
let's reboot a gigolo.
Let's move on. One last thing in the media corner. We have listener Mike Hall's lightning image. We were talking about how lightning strikes twice in multiple places. Yes. And he said, actually, it does. And as an avid lightning photographer, and the link in the show notes will take you to an awesome picture on Flickr of his.
Yes, I saw that, and I was like, I've got to put this in the show. So yes, he says it's his hobby to take pictures of lightning.
That's pretty cool.
It's
a hard thing to photograph. I've tried.
Yes, it is very hard. And so, oh, by the way, I do have one story I want to throw in here real quick. No, I'm sorry. I'll talk about it in a minute after your What the Chuck. How about that?
Okay. What the Chuck?
What's up with that?
All right, I am ready to smash Hulk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This week has just been a test of patience. And I want this to be a lesson to everybody who uses eBay, particularly the sellers out there. Be cautious. Be very, very cautious of what goes on, because they are good. They are very good at trying to scam you. Not eBay specifically, but the buyers who are trying to scam you. I was trying to sell, I recently got a Nikon D90 on a very good deal from my daughter's boyfriend, and enjoying it very much, and said, I really have no use for the D50. So I listed the D50 a week ago Thursday, and it was going up and up. And I'm like, hey, great. I put a buy it now price of $300 on it. And in the last few minutes, it went past that price, which was suspicious. Why would anybody pay more than the buy it now price? I don't know. But, you know, you get in that excitement of selling something, and so you see dollar signs.
Oh, my gosh. There's been so many times my wife was, she was bidding on clothes for Harrison when he was smaller.
Yep.
And she was like, she quit bidding because she goes, oh, I can just get that down the street for that. But people would go and outbid her.
you got to put a limit on your bids, and I always
do
that.
But people would, you know, keep... Anyway.
So anyway, the seller contacts me and says, please send this to Missouri in the U.S. And I said, great, because I have in there U.S. shipments only. I can't afford to send this thing to, you know, Taiwan or South Africa or something and still make a dollar on it. So I said, U.S. shipments only. I put a fixed price on there. And I said, great. Person comes back and says, would you be willing to send me photos of the camera? I was like, man, I already boxed it up, but okay, for anything for sale. So I took some pictures and sent that. They said, okay, I will pay as soon as, if you can send it to Nigeria. Ding, ding, ding. You know, mail alerts are going off at this point. Yeah. So I get these two mail that says, you know, you've had a fund transfer to PayPal, and it looks legit, except for two things. I use Gmail, the web client of Gmail, and eBay and PayPal will have a gold key next to their name,
right?
Which means they're certified from that source. It's kind of like, you know, that you can trust it. Well, those two messages did not. The content looked good, but if you hover over the links went someplace else. This is a phishing attempt. So this person's trying to convince me that they paid. And I said, no, I have received no payment in my PayPal account. I actually logged into PayPal and saw that the balance had not changed. There's no outstanding transactions. There's nothing that they can revoke. There's nothing there as evidence. So strike three. Okay.
Yep.
They also just created that account on eBay that day. Made one bid on this item, which was basically to drive up the price as high as possible, and then tried to take me for all it was worth. So Craig and I were going back on IM. I said, hey, great. Oh, wait, they're not paying. They want this. And Craig's going, run fast.
That's what I said. That's exactly what I said. run away.
So I called this person out. I wasn't accusing them of anything. I was just stating facts. I said, this looks suspicious to me. I'm not comfortable sending it to Nigeria. The selling arrangement said U.S. shipment only. You are not abiding by the sale. Your account was created today or the day of the sale. You paid more than the buy it now price, which is suspicious.
Yep.
You want it sent to Nigeria, which I don't feel comfortable doing anyway.
I think I've gotten several emails from Nigeria that kind of sold me against dealing with them.
So it just, it stunk on all levels. They haven't come back, except I think they had one final message as well. I'm going to tell PayPal about this and I'm going to write you bad feedback. I'm like, good luck with that, buddy. You know, I've been on eBay since 1997, since basically when they started. So you're not going anywhere fast because you got a zero rating already. So be careful, be cautious, protect yourself if you're selling on eBay. I then offered it to the next seller. They didn't take it, which I suspect might be scammed as well. And I relisted it. Well, eBay closes out their invoice and they go, hey, you owe us $34 for this. And I said, it's sold, but I haven't collected and I don't think I'll collect. So I got in contact with them and they have what's called a buyer or a seller dispute or a payment dispute form that you can fill out. You put in your number there and you say, I have not been paid for this item. And they won't charge me for that. Now, I have to wait 4 days, which is this coming Monday as this is being recorded, to fill that out.
You explained about the whole U.S.-Nigeria thing?
What's that?
You explained about the whole U.S.-Nigeria thing?
Yeah, the agent was very, very attentive. It didn't really matter to them because they weren't going to do anything anyway. But if I've got to wait 4 days, then I fill out this dispute, then I wait another 4 days, and the whole thing's closed. So by that time, I will have resold the camera, hopefully. It's got bids on it again because I've had to relist it. So I'm out about $2.
Did you put it in bold and with asterisks around it? U.S. only.
I'll do it again and again and again. You know, it's driving me nuts. So, hey, scammers, stop wasting my time on eBay. It's not working. And with any luck, it won't work even more as people get a little smarter in this day and age. Mm-hmm. So,
hey, and I'll give kudos to you for not accepting the PayPal payment right away.
It was tempting.
Which I could have almost made that mistake myself. And looking at the message headers on the email from PayPal and realizing that, hey, this is not correct.
Yeah. Another feature of Gmail that I really like is those little keys. They just saved me. Well worth every dollar I pay for Gmail.
I'm surprised they didn't come up and say this is possible phishing.
It could. I should have reported it as phishing. Should have done that. All right, you just threw something in here at the last minute. What is this? Because we're keeping short, we're running low on time. This is a long show.
Okay, I had to throw this in here. Megan Enlow, you know, Podcast Junkie.
Yeah.
You find her on Twitter by Podcast Junkie. She had posted this on Google+, that she had gotten evicted from her kid's school for having a science project or something cool, a science project.
What?
And what, in here, I'll read it to you real quick. She said she just got evicted from the kids' school for having a science project that the kids were too excited about. Builder Boy wanted to show off his new Snap Rover to his big sister. And when we picked her up from school, the Snap Rover is a cool little car that only works if the kids put the electronic circuits together correctly. It's a science project, she says, with the exclamation point. We were asked to leave because the kids were all crowding around it at the school and were afraid they might trip over it.
Jeez.
She goes, really? Says they are going to trip over a slow moving science project that they can't take their eyes off of. Her final line here is, I guess the lesson for today is if fun and science are happening at the same time, an educator's job is just put a stop to it.
Well, I'm glad there was a lesson in that, having a school-related theme.
Thanks,
Megan. That's stupid, man. Because you know what's going to happen? In the next fall, the school's going to have a whole bunch of these to teach kids science.
Yeah, right. Hey, I like that little thing. Let's buy a bunch of those. So, anyway, it just stinks. You know, kids get excited about something and I like her line about it. You know, they can't take their eyes off of it, but yet they may trip over it.
That's unlikely.
Yeah.
Closing out with the Geek Library, we have a couple of cool things, just drinking vessels that you might be interested in. The nerdiest coffee mug ever from listener Brian is one of those, you know how certain coffee mugs do change colors or whatever when they fill them with hot liquids? This one is a coffee mug that has a little battery, and as it gets hot, the little segments of the battery light up almost as if it's being charged. So if you want to recharge your batteries with coffee, that's a neat one. I believe that's over at ThinkGeek now.
You'd have to just drink hot water or tea in there.
Right. I could do that. Yeah. It's not a coffee mug. It's a hot beverage vessel.
Are you? You're still no caffeine, right?
I'm still no caffeine. In fact, I've even trimmed back. Even some of the decaf teas and things still give me a funny feeling in the head. So I've gone to just like hot lemon and honey, which I could use for my raspy voice now.
There's the other too one, much caffeine in this lemon.
The other one is the superhero beer glass. If you ever got so intoxicated you thought you had superpowers, well, this will certainly confirm it. This is like a little Batman one with a black cape on it, and a little Superman one with a red cape on it. So, yeah, I want my little pint glass to have a cape on it. Mine's just got a sailing ship on it.
You know what? This also reminds me of something I started doing. You know, between me and Harrison and Kim, we always have a cup out, you know. And Kim will put them up because she doesn't know whose it is and know how long it's been there. She thinks it's, you know, an old cup, you know, it needs to be put in the dishwasher or something. So what I did was I got tired of that, and I started putting a rubber band on it with my name on the rubber band. Instead of having to write on the cup, you know?
Yep.
Trying to identify it, that's all. Just saying.
Keep track of your stuff, man. You know, yeah. This marriage thing is suspicious.
She wants me to go to Nigeria for some reason.
How do you get your money back?
She wants her money back.
And with that, we're going to take it to the end of the show. We appreciate you giving us your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call listener line. Where is that?
Send your comments to technorama@chuckchat.com.
Try that again.
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
Well done, Marilyn. And if you want the email, rewind about 10 seconds and listen to her say the email address again. Yeah, follow us on Twitter, all that stuff. Watch us live Sunday nights, 9:30 Eastern, right on the website, chuckchat.com/technorama. And we'd love to see you there. Special thanks to Madmar for providing all the great blog content. Everyone who sent us links during the show, Brian, NCAF, who else was there? Mike, thank you very much, everybody who sent us links while we were off. Hope you enjoyed the interviews we had with the Dracula dude and that movie guy, too. Oh, I mean, Sigler. Isn't Sigler the Dracula dude?
Yeah, the painter of dark.
The painter of dark and the filmmaker of dark. So a couple of cool interviews we had. We're also lining up a couple other ones that bring you some enjoyment there as well. We like doing them, and we like bringing them to you. Hope you enjoy them as well. Thanks to those who joined us in the Google Hangout and in the chat room. It's been a whole lot of fun. And thank you for downloading and listening to this show or watching it live or later on the video feed. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. It's also a proud participant in the family over at farpointmedia.com. Go over there. Check out the podcast. I'm sure you'll find something you like.
We dare you.
Again. And again. And again, until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
101. Well, let me get in the camera. 101.
Careful, that's starting to look obscene.
I just love scanning for life forms. Life forms. You tiny little life forms. You precious little life forms. Where are you?